Sir Francis was aware of the turmoil of emotion that Hal was suffering as he listened to the woman in whom he had placed so much trust pouring out her lies. He felt his son sag physically as she destroyed his faith in her.
"Be of good heart, my boy," he said softly from the corner of his mouth,
and felt Hal sit up straighter on the hard bench.
"My dear lady, we know that you have suffered a terrible ordeal at the hands of these inhuman monsters."
By this time, Schroeder was trembling with anger to hear of her ordeal. Katinka nodded and dabbed daintily at her eyes with a lace handkerchief.
"Do you believe that animals such as these should have shown mercy? Or should be shown mercy? Or should they be subjected to the full force and majesty of the law?"
"Sweet Jesus knows that I am only a poor female with a soft and loving heart for all God's creation,"
Katinka's voice broke pitifully.
"But I know that everybody in this assembly will agree with me that the simple hanging is too good for these unspeakable wretches."
A murmur of agreement spread slowly along the benches of spectators, then turned into a deep growl. Like a pit full of bears at feeding time, they wanted blood.
"Burn them!" a woman screamed. "They are not fit to be called men!"
Katinka lifted her head, and for the first time since entering the hall she looked directly at Hal, staring through her tears straight into his eyes. Hal lifted his chin and stared back. He felt the love and awe he had cherished for her withering, like a tender vine struck with the black mould. Sir Francis felt it too, and turned to look at him. He saw the ice in his son's eyes and could almost feel the heat of the flames in his heart.
"She was never worthy of you," Sir Francis said softly. "Now that you have renounced her, you have taken another mighty leap into manhood."
Did his father really understand, Hal wondered? Did he know what had taken place? Did he know of Hal's feelings? If that was so, surely he would long ago have rejected him. He turned and looked into Sir Francis's eyes, fearing to see them filled with scorn and revulsion, but his father's gaze was mellow with understanding. Hal realized that he knew everything, and had probably known all along. Far from rejecting him, his father was offering him strength and redemption.
"I have committed adultery, and I have disgraced my knighthood," Hal whispered. "I am no longer worthy to be called your son."
The manacle on his wrist clinked as Sir Francis laid his hand on the boy's knee.
"'Twas this harlot that led you astray. The blame is not yours. You will always be my son, and I shall always be proud of you," he whispered.
Thunderfelder frowned down upon Sir Francis.
"Silence! No more of your muttering. Is it another touch of decay you are seeking?"
He turned back to his wife.
"Mifro, you have been very brave. I am sure Mynheer Hopp will not wish to trouble you further."
He transferred his gaze to the unfortunate clerk, who scrambled to his feet.
Mefro,
the single word came out sharp and clear as a pistol shot, surprising Hopp as much as everyone else in the court.
Thank you for your testimony, and we have no questions.
There was only one catch on the word testimony, and Hopp sat down again triumphantly.
"Well said, Hopp,"
Thunderfelder beamed at him in avuncular fashion, and then turned a doting smile on his wife.
"You may return to your seat, Mefro."
There was a lust-laden hush, and every man in the hall let his gaze drop as Katinka lifted her skirts just high enough to expose her perfect little ankles, clad in white silk, and stepped down from the platform. As soon as she was seated, Schroeder said,
"Now, Lord Cumbrae, may we trouble you?"
In his full regalia, the buzzard mounted the platform, and as he took the oath, placed one hand on the flashing yellow cairngorm in the hilt of his dagger. Once Schroeder had established who and what he was, he asked the buzzard,
"Do you know the pirate captain, Courtney?"
"Like a brother,"
Cumbrae smiled down on Sir Francis.
"Once we were close."
"Not any more?"
Schroeder asked sharply.
"Alas, it pains me, but when my old friend began to change, there was a parting of our ways, although I still feel a great affection for him."
"How did he change?"
"Well, he was always a braw laddie, was Frankie. We sailed in company on many a day, through storm and balmy days. There was no man I loved better. Fair he was, and honest, brave and generous to his friends.
Cumbrae broke off, and an expression of deep sorrow knitted his brow.
You speak in the past tense, my lord. What changed?
Ah, 'twas Francis who changed. At first it was in little things. He was cruel to his captives and hard on his crew, flogging and hanging when it weren't called for. Then he changed towards his old friends, lying and cheating them out of their share of the prize. He became a hard man and bitter.
Thank you for your this honesty, Schroeder said. I can see it gives you no pleasure to reveal these truths.
No pleasure at all, Cumbrae confirmed with sadness. I hate to see me old friend in chains, though God Almighty knows well he deserves no mercy for his murderous behaviour towards honest Dutch seamen and innocent women.
When did you last sail in company with Courtney?
Ugh, it were not long ago, in April of this year. Our two ships were on patrol together off Orgullis, waiting to waylay the company galleons as they rounded the cape to call in here at Table Bay.
There was a murmur of patriotic anger from the spectators, which Van der Velde ignored.
Were you then also a corsair?
Schroeder glared at him.
Were you also preying on Dutch shipping?
No, Colonel Schroeder, I was not a pirate or a corsair. During the recent war between our two countries, I was a commissioned privateer.
Pray, my lord, tell us the difference between a pirate and a privateer.
Oh, it is simply that a privateer sails under letters of marque, issued by his sovereign in times of war, and so is a legitimate man of war. A pirate is a robber and an outlaw, carrying out his depredations without any sanction but that of the Lord of Darkness, Satan himself.
I see.
So you had a letter of marque when you were raiding the Dutch shipping?
Yes, Colonel, I did.
Are you able to show this document to us?
Naturally.
Cumbrae reached into his sleeve and drew out a roll of parchment. He leaned down and handed it to Schroeder.
Thank you.
Schroeder unrolled it and held it up for all to see, heavy with scarlet ribbons and wax seals. He read aloud,
"Know you by these presents that our dearly beloved Angus Cochrane, Earl of Cumbrae?"
"Very well, Colonel,"
Van der Velde interrupted testily. "No need to read us the whole thing.
Let me have it here, if you please."
Schroeder bowed.
"As your excellency pleases."
He handed up the document. Van der Velde glanced at it, then set it aside.
"Please go on with your questions." "My lord, did Courtney, the prisoner, also have one of these letters of marque?"
"Well, now, if he did, I was not aware of it."
The buzzard grinned openly at Sir Francis.
"Would you have expected to be aware of it, if the letter had in fact existed?"
"Well, Sir Francis and I were very close. No secrets between us. Yes, he would have told me."
"He never discussed the letter with you?"
Schroeder looked annoyed, like a pedagogue whose pupil has forgotten his lines.
"Never?" "Oh, yes, now I do recall one occasion. I asked if he had a royal commission."
"And what was his reply?"
"He said, 'It ain't nothing but a bit of paper anyway. I don't trouble myself with rubbish like that.'"
"So, you knew that he had no letter, and yet you sailed in his company?"
Cumbrae shrugged.
"It was wartime, and it was none of my business."
"So you were off Cape Orgullis with the prisoner after the peace had been signed, and you were still raiding Dutch shipping. Can you explain that to us?"
"It was simple, Colonel. We didn't know about the peace. That is, until I fell in with a Portuguese caravelle outward bound from Lisbon to Goa. I hailed her, and her captain told me that peace had been signed."
"What was the name of this Portuguese ship?"
"She was the El Draco."
"Was the prisoner Courtney present at this meeting with her?"
"No. His patrol station was north of mine. He was over the horizon and out of sight at the time."
Schroeder nodded.
"Where is this ship now?"
I have here a copy of a news sheet from London, only 3 months old. It arrived 3 days ago on the company ship lying in the bay at this moment."
The buzzard produced the sheet from his sleeve with a magician's flourish.
"El Drago was lost with all hands in a storm in the Bay of Biscay while on her homeward voyage."
"So it would seem, then,
that we will never have any way of disproving your meeting with her off Orgullis.
You'll just have to take my word for it, Colonel. Cumbrae stroked his great red beard.
What did you do when you heard of the peace between England and Holland?
Well, as an honest man, there was only one thing I could do. I broke off my patrol and went in search of the Lady Edwina.
To warn her that the war was over? Schroeder suggested.
Of course, and to tell Frankie that my letter of marque was no longer valid and that I was going home.
Did you find Courtney? Did you give him that message?
I found him within a few hours' sailing. He was due north of my position, about 20 leagues distant.
What did he say when you told him that the war was over?
He said, "It may be over for you, but it ain't over for me. Rain or shine, wind or calm, war or peace, I am going to catch myself a fat cheesehead."
There was a ferocious clanking of chains, and Big Daniel sprang to his feet, dragging the diminutive figure of Ned Tyler off the bench with him.
"There ain't a word of truth in it, you lying Scots bastard," he thundered.
Van der Velde jumped up and wagged his finger at Daniel.
"Sit down, you English animal, or I'll have you threshed, and not just with the light cane."
Sir Francis turned and reached back to grab Daniel's arm. "Calm yourself, Master Daniel," he said quietly. "Don't give the buzzard the pleasure of watching us ache." Big Daniel sank down, muttering furiously to himself, but he would not disobey his captain.
"I am sure that Governor van der Velde will take notice of the unruly and desperate nature of these villains," Schroeder said, then turned his attention back to the buzzard. "Did you ever see Courtney again before today?"
"Aye, I did. When I heard that, despite my warning, he had seized a company galleon, I went to find him and remonstrate with him, to ask him to free the ship and its cargo, and to release the hostages he was holding to ransom."
"How did he respond to your pleas?"
"He turned his guns upon my ship, killing 12 of my seamen, and he attacked me with fireships."
The buzzard shook his head at the memory of this perfidious treatment by an old friend and shipmate.
"That was when I came here to Table Bay to inform Governor Clanehands of the galleon's whereabouts and to offer to lead an expedition to recapture the ship and her cargo from the pirates."
"As a soldier myself, I can only commend you, my lord, on your exemplary conduct. I have no further questions, Your Excellency." Schroeder bowed at van der Velde.
"Hop, do you have any questions?"
van der Velde demanded. Hop looked confused and glanced in an appeal at Sir Francis.
Your Excellency, he stuttered, might I speak to Sir Francis alone, if only for a minute?"
For a while it seemed that van der Velde might refuse the request, but he clasped his brow wearily.
"If you insist on holding up these proceedings all the time, Hop, we will be here all week."
"Ah, very well, man. You may talk to the prisoner, but do try to be quick."
Hop hurried across to Sir Francis and leaned close. He asked a question, and listened to the reply with an expression of dawning horror on his pale face. He nodded and kept nodding as Sir Francis whispered in his ear, then went back to his table. He stared down at his papers, breathing like a pearl diver about to plunge out of his canoe into 20 fathoms of water. Finally he looked up and shouted at Cumbrae,
"The first you knew of the end of the war was when you tried to cut out the Swallow from under the fortress here in Table Bay and were told about it by Colonel Schroeder."
It came out in a single rush, without check or pause, but it was a long speech, and Hop reeled back, gasping from the exertion.
"Have you lost your wits, Hop?" van der Velde bellowed. "Are you accusing a nobleman of lying, you little turd?"
Hop drew another full breath, took his fragile courage in both hands, and shouted again.
"You held Captain Courtney's letter of marque in your own two hands, then brandished it in his face while you burned it to ashes."
Again it came out fluently, but Hop was spent. He stood there gulping for air. Van der Velde was on his feet now.
"If you are looking for advancement in the company, Hop, you are going about it in a very strange way. You stand there hurling crazy accusations at a man of high rank. Don't you know your place, you worthless guttersnipe? How dare you behave like this? Sit down before I have taken you out and flogged."
Hop dropped into his seat as though he'd received a musket ball in the head. Breathing heavily, Funderfelder bowed towards the buzzard.
"I must apologize, my lord. Every person here knows that you were instrumental in rescuing the hostages and saving the Standfastigate from the clutches of these villains. Please ignore those insulting statements and return to your seat. We are grateful for your help in this matter."
As Cumbrie crossed the floor, Funderfelder suddenly became aware of the writer scribbling away busily beside him.
"Don't write that down, you fool. It was not part of the court proceedings. Here, let me see your journal."
He snatched it from the clerk, and as he read, his face darkened. He leaned across and took the quill from the writer's hand. With a series of broad strokes, he expurgated those parts of the text that offended him. Then he pushed the book back towards the writer.
"Use your intelligence. Paper is an expensive commodity. Don't waste it by writing down unimportant rubbish."
Then he transferred his attention to the two advocates.
"Gentlemen, I should like this matter settled today. I do not want to put the company to unnecessary expense by wasting any more time. Colonel Schroeder, I think you have made a thoroughly convincing presentation of the case against the pirates. I hope that you do not intend to gild the lily by calling any more witnesses, do you?"
"As your excellency pleases.
I had intended calling 10 more." "Sweet heavens!" Funderfelder looked appalled. "That will not be necessary at all."
Schroeder bowed deeply and sat down. Funderfelder lowered his head like a bull about to charge and looked at the defense advocate.
"Hop," he growled. "You have just seen how reasonable Colonel Schroeder has been and what an excellent example in the economy of words and time he has set for this court. What are your intentions?"
"May I call Sir Francis Courtney to give evidence?" Hop stuttered.
"I strongly advise against it," Funderfelder told him ominously. "Certainly it will do your case little good." "I want to show that he did not know that the war had ended, and that he was sailing under a commission from the English king."
Hop ploughed on obstinately, and Funderfelder flushed crimson.
"Damn you, Hop! Haven't you listened to a word I said? We know all about that line of defense, and I will take it into consideration when I ponder my verdict. You don't have to regurgitate those lies again."
"I would like to have the prisoner say it just for the court records."
Hop was close to tears, and his words limped painfully over his crippled tongue.
"You are trying my patience, Hop. Continue in this fashion, and you will be on the next ship back to Amsterdam. I cannot have a disloyal company servant spreading dissension and sedition throughout the colony."
Hop looked alarmed to hear himself described in such terms, and he capitulated with alacrity.
I apologize for delaying the business of this honorable court. I rest the case for the defense."
"Good man. You have done a fine job of work, Hop. I will make a notation to that effect in my next dispatch to the Saventine."
Vanderfelder's face resumed its natural color, and he beamed jovially about the hall.
"We will adjourn for the midday meal, and for the court to consider its verdict. We will reconvene at 4 o'clock this afternoon. Take the prisoners back to the dungeons."